It gives me great pleasure to introduce our 10-minute speaker, Suzanne. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm Suzanne, I'm an alcoholic. Betty asked me this morning at the 8 o'clock meeting, would you be a 10-minute speaker? And I said, I don't know. I was just waking up. I go, give me a minute to think about it. And I thought about it. And it's kind of weird because about my birthday was on the 26th. And I was telling myself, man, if I go to that 7 o'clock meeting, I could, you know, get my cake. And I didn't know if you did chips or not on Sunday nights, but I got my chip the other day. And I go, it would be really cool to go to a meeting. I saw a movie where the girl went to a meeting, and it was a birthday, and then she got to get up there and be the speaker for the night. And I go, man, how can I possibly go up there and do this and do that? And I want to tell my story. It's my birthday, you know? And I totally forgot about that. And then she asked me to do it today, and I go, I have to think about it. And then I go, oh, my God, I prayed for this. I prayed for this shit. So I can stand up here, excuse my language. Watch what you ask for and pray for because it might happen. That's what I'm finding out in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for the last 5 years. So 5 years ago today, I was laying in bed still with a concussion. I had face planted into the pavement. Didn't know what happened. Blacked out after a party at the San Luis Obispo Country Club. We kicked the band out because they weren't good enough, and it was a business party. Oh my God, it was crazy. I don't know how we got home, but all I remember was waking up in the morning, and I had my eyes were shut and stuck shut, and I said, what? I told my husband, I go, dude, I got sleep in my eye. What's up? I can't open my eyes, and he looked at me, and he goes, oh my God, that's not sleep, that's blood, and my eyes were stuck shut. Like a kitten, you know, you gotta get, you know. And but I didn't look like a kitten. I looked like, oh, it was horrific. So anyways, he had to get up and go to work. He was always really good at that. And so I laid in bed till probably 3, like usual, 4. And I go, I was scared to get up because I was scared of the impending doom. And do you know what you did last night? And missed phone calls. And the video phone, you know, was really popular then. My kids had phones. They would start recording me. Do you want me to show you what you did last night? I go, no, your dad's going to tell me when he gets home. I already know this. And so I go through my phone looking for clues. It's like, did I check in anywhere? Was I there? Did I call anybody? And there were so many nights before that I had called my bosses and this and that. And I show up to work and all of a sudden they just like blank faced. And I'm all, what's up? And they just blank faced like, really? I'm all, yeah, what? You don't remember calling me last night at 3 a.m? I said, oh, I called you? Yeah, I hated those moments. I was not a good drinker, man. For years, I was a terrible drinker. But I tried and I tried and I tried to figure it out. I tried to change my alcohol from hard liquor to wine and beer to just one kind of hard liquor. You know, the things, what it says in the readings, that's what I did. So anyways, I found out what happened the night before by doing my investigative work. I should have been a CIA agent, really, because I could find out anything that happened. On my own, I was so swift, and I could find out anything my husband was doing because I had all day to think about it because I couldn't leave the house because I was so sick. My pants were ruined. My shirt was ruined. And so what happened was I tripped out of the car coming out of the passenger seat. I guess my heels got stuck in that, you know, where you get out the door. My husband was coming over around to open the door, and he said he just heard a – he didn't catch me in time, and he heard a crack. I cracked my face open. And it just reminded me of that because I had my – the little Indian lady was doing my threading at the mall the other day, and she was new, and I have a scar that's still here. They had to fix my face here, and I still get lumps once in a while. If I gain weight, I'll get lumps in my head. But that wasn't the worst time. That was not the worst thing in my drinking. That was just happened to be the last thing that happened. There are so many things that happen worse than that in life, and it's like, but nothing really woke me up. And, you know, I learned in here, it takes what it takes. You got to go through exactly what you got to go through to get it. You know, I was in and out of the rooms involuntarily in my 20s. A lawyer suggested for domestic violence. He's like, go go get a card signed or go do this. It's going to look really good in court. So I started going. I had no clue what it was. I came back in my 30s, and then I came back in my 40s at 45, 5 years ago. And it takes what it takes. I believe that the spirit in the room and the divine higher power I choose to call God and Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, he knew exactly when I was going to get sober before I was born. He knew I was going to go through what I had to go through because I had to have a message to share. I can't share something with you that I didn't experience. So, you know, when people start talking and no one's horrified in here when you start telling them your stories. If I sat here and just told somebody else at a dinner party tonight on New Year's Eve what happened, everybody would be horrified. And they're like, oh my God, get that lady out of here. She's a wacko. You guys just sit here like, yeah. Yeah, what's up? You know, no big deal. It's because we all speak the same language. We all have the core. We have alcoholism, you know, and it runs through us. It doesn't matter how much money you have, what kind of car you drive, if you're black, white, Asian, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's an equal opportunity employer, I guess. And it was a full-time job for me. Full-time job, overtime. And I didn't get paid. Instead of getting direct deposits, I was getting withdrawals. Anyway, so they say your mind clears after 5 years. And that's, I'm waiting. It's been like 4 days. It's like, okay. But I've been really calm. Really, really, really calm. It's like kind of cool. My cocaine in 5 years. And then I was reading in the Daily Reflection. It's like talking about how living today. And it's not saying live today, just live day by day, one day at a time. It doesn't mean that financially, you know, you got to plan. You got to get up to go to work. You got to plan. But it's saying live emotionally for today. You know, what you're going to do today, what you have to do today to keep you sober, what you did. You know, do what you do, and you get what you get. You know, that's what my sponsor says. And so the emotional sobriety thing, and, you know, we go look back on the year. And it's amazing. I had a great year this year. And I don't like, I'm still scared to jinx it. I'm like, you know, I'm still scared to even talk about all the great things that happened because I have to knock on wood because you know what? As soon as I start saying nice things about myself, God's going to take all that away and I'm scared. So whatever keeps you in the room, you know, do the steps, talk to somebody after meeting. We got nobody in here who's like a really newcomer, but find somebody. You know, you don't have to get a sponsor. You just get a friend. Say, open the book, read with me. You know, Jack comes over and stands in the street with me and tells me about the program. You know, my neighbors think we're wacko, you know. But we are. We're crazy. And we're not dull. We're sober. You know, life gets way beyond what you imagine. So anyways, I'm glad there's kids here tonight, too. Especially the one. He's my buddy right there. Anyways, that's it. Did I go 10 minutes? Do you want me to keep going? No, I'm kidding. No, I'm good. Keith, yes.
Way to go, sister.
The gang signs over here. That was 10 minutes, huh?
That was 9.
I talk fast, so sorry.
Thank you, Suzanne. So I want to tell you a little story. When I got here, I was a pretty... So I know I'm not the speaker. But when I got here, I was pretty beat up, and this lady asked me, she said, hey, you want to go to this women's meeting? So I sat over here at this women's meeting. She sat next to me, and I cried my eyes out. She put her arm around me and loved me. And she's been my person for 9 years. And I love her very much. So I want to introduce Betty. Yeah.
I love her. Oh my God. I'm Betty Alcoholic. I should have known she was going to do that to me, but you know, I'm grateful today. My sobriety date is July 13, 2003. And today is my 59th birthday, and I'm sober on New Year's Eve. And that's a fucking miracle. Excuse my mouth. That's a miracle. You know, when I was in and out of these rooms for so long, you know, even in New Jersey, I did a geographical from New Jersey to here to run away from myself. to run away from my disease, and my disease came with me. I started drinking. I come from a long line of alcoholics. I had two brothers that died horrible deaths, cirrhosis of the livers, deaths. And as a matter of fact, he's 19 years passed away today, too. So it's a really emotional day for me, you know. So when I got here, you know, I didn't come in here with the intentions to stay sober. I came in here with a court card numerous times, and I didn't stay sober. I was in and out for years. And my story is going to include drugs because it was a big part of my story. And if that offends you, call your sponsor. I'm sorry. You know, there's nothing I can do about it. But anyway, you know, everything started out with alcohol. You know, if I started drinking, I started doing something else. And I remember when I was little, I used to take sips of my father's beers when I got the beers from the refrigerator. And I liked the taste of it. And this was like 7 years old. And I remember that because they would have card parties and they'd be gambling and stuff like that. And they would tip us to go get their beers. So my sisters and I and my brothers would drink, sip their beers. By the time they got it, it was like half full. You know what I mean? And it was crazy. And on the other side, my mom didn't drink at all. If she had a screwdriver on New Year's Eve, that would be her only drink of the year. And it was like, really? You know? But anyway, like I said, I was in and out for a long time. And I came in here with a court card and was signing my own court card for a while. It was when the club was over on over near the library. Was that Ben Wiley? No, not Ben Wiley. McClelland. So I've been around for quite a while. But anyway, this time around when I came in, you know, I came in with a CWS case. My son was taken. Okay, I got to tell the story. This is what happened. Okay, I was living in Casmelia and I was drinking and doing cocaine and all that stuff. And I was going to somebody's house and the sheriff pulled us over. So, of course, I had paraphernalia on me, so I put it on a fence. This little Mexican lady told the sheriff, there's something on the fence. So me, being the brilliant alcoholic addict that I am, I left my son in the yard, and I ran through somebody's house, and I ran in the bathtub, and I just left my son, you know? And it was a Friday, and I couldn't do anything about it till Monday. But when I ran through these people's houses, they were like, who the hell are you, you know? And it was just crazy, you know, just to leave my son there like that. You know, how could I do that? You know, but the disease had me by everything. It had everything. I was totally addicted to everything. Didn't matter what I put in my body. So this time around when I came in, something changed. You know, I did it, like I said, for the courts to get my son back. But I kept hearing messages in here and shares in here that people get their lives back. And I wanted something different. I did not want to keep drinking and using the way I was drinking and using because I was going to die if I did not stop. So I came in here. When I came in, there was a bunch of I'm old lady now, but there was ladies with white hair here. And I kept hearing, oh, honey, keep coming back. And, you know, we'll love you till you love yourself. And I was like, what the hell? And I remember one lady, Gussie. Gussie had a big impact on my recovery. I remember doing my first, the third step prayer with her on her knees, and I was like, the feeling I got from just doing that step was such a relief and serenity that I never knew that I could have. But that was only the beginning. You know, I had to come in here, and I did admit I was an alcoholic, and I did have a God when I was younger, but it was like, no, that's a lie. I knew there was a God, but I didn't believe in God. You know, I went to Sunday school, and because we were forced to go to Sunday school, and I was skipping Sunday school to play pinball with my sisters, you know? And I really didn't believe in God. But when I got in here, you know, I started seeing my life change. I wasn't drinking a day at a time, and things were starting to happen in my life. You know what I mean? And when I made that decision to turn my life over to the care of my God, I had to sincerely do that. I had to be honest with myself, and if I had any qualms about it, I discussed it with Gussie, and it changed. It changed, and I felt that peace and serenity when I got up off that floor. And what a blessing that is to be able to just have relief. That's all it was. It was peace and serenity and relief that I didn't have to get up and drink and use again. And, you know, it took me a while to do my fourth step. I remember I handed it to Gussie at the time, and she goes, no, take this back. This is not your fourth step, you know. Do some more work. And then I realized, you know, I wasn't being honest. I wasn't being honest about what had happened, what my part was in it. I mean, I had a traumatic teenage years and stuff with molesting and all that stuff going on, abuse, sexual abuse, and I didn't want to look at that because I couldn't figure out. I didn't want to feel the pain. I didn't want to feel the pain of it. But talking with her, I knew that if I didn't feel the pain, how am I going to heal? How can I heal myself if I'm not willing to work through that stuff? You know, and it wasn't easy. I'm not going to tell you that it was easy. It wasn't easy at all. I was scared to death. And I was scared to share my stuff with another woman, what I had done, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief, and all the wreckage that I had caused in my life. You know, my youngest son, CJ, when I got here, he was a CWS case, and that was the worst pain that I ever felt in my life, having my son taken from me. And there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it. But, you know, with God's grace, I got him back within, I think it was 30 days, because they were going to move him to another foster home out of the area, and they did not want him to go. So I had gotten the visits and all that going on. But I want to back up. Before I came to California, and I share this because it's part of my story, and it was a blessing in disguise at the time. When I was drinking and using, I was sleeping around and doing all that shit that we do, and I had a daughter that, I don't know how old she is because I really blocked it from my mind, but she was a drug baby and she was born with spina bifida and she was paralyzed. And through all that, you know, I kept drinking and using after that, but this is how my God worked in my life. She was adopted out, the mother, the father, and the brother that adopted her, and I had no idea this, all had spina bifida. I don't know how that happens. I don't know how, you know, God is amazing. God is amazing. And I never saw that as a blessing until I really looked at it. You know what I mean? And I share that because if you lost your kids, if you know, anything like that, God is amazing. He can change our lives around if we're willing to give him our will in our life and do the work of these steps. So I had to be fully ready. And like I said, I was. I was ready when I did that fourth step. I was ready to get rid of all that garbage and get it off my shoulders. Get it off of me. You know, it just was bearing me down. And I come in here and I just learned that I was entirely ready to God, for God to start working in me. That was the bottom line. I don't know. I'm nervous. Why am I nervous? I don't know. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, just know that this program works and just keep coming back. If you don't have the desire to stay sober, just keep coming back and maybe you'll hear something here. And like I said, that's been my experience. I've done all the steps with a sponsor. I sponsor girls. I've made direct amends to everybody that I had on my list. And the best amends I made was to my baby sister. We used to get loaded together, and she had stole from me and actually punched me in my face when we were getting loaded. And we didn't talk for like almost 12 years. And one day on and this is on Facebook, she messaged me and she said, "I love you and we need to talk." And I was like, I just cried. You know, I cried, and that's the healing that these steps have given me, that I can communicate. If I did somebody wrong, I'm able to go back and make amends. And today I don't live like that anymore, and I'm there for people in my life and my family. You know what I mean? God has provided everything that I need in my life. He's above and beyond what I think I need. You know, I'm a human being, and I think I need this, and I think I need that, and all I need is my higher power and to rely on him. You know, I'm very grateful that for a total of 7 years, I got to work in recovery and see people come in shaking and baking and be able to share my experience with them and my strength with them and just have them feel a part of, whether it's in treatment or wherever it is, in the rooms, whatever it is. You know, I always wanted to be a part of it. I never was. I was a little, tiny little girl, born New Year's Eve, 2.5 pounds, 3 months early, so I didn't fit in from the get-go, you know what I mean? And then I just didn't fit in, and today I know that my higher power has given me, you people in these rooms, this is a family to me. I can reach out to anybody here if I need help with anything, and it's been proven that they're there for me. And that's what I want to be, a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous. And but I still have to work on myself. I have to work on myself on a daily basis and do those inventories in the morning. I get up in the morning and I pray and I think about my day ahead of me. And then at night, you know, I can look at my day again and I know for me, I know the difference. I just look at my day. when I go to bed. And I'm really screwing this up, I feel like. It's a blessing. It's just a blessing that I don't wake up shaking and baking, like I said. And who benefited the most from this is my family. It's definitely my family. I have a son in Arizona, and he called me today and was crying. And he goes, "Mama, I love you so much." And this is a son that we had a lot of difficulties, that I had difficulties with, his drinking and using. And I was able to be there for him when he called me and told me, "Mom, I want to commit suicide. I'm tired of my life." And this is it was like midnight, and I was working in Lompoc, and he called me, and I'm like, "I have to go." You know, and I get to carry this message in my family. I get to carry this message in these rooms. Janet, congratulations on your year. You know, I love you. I love you very much, and it's good to see you here. I don't know. I'm not done yet. I'm sorry. I'm just really nervous, and I thought I would have a speech up here, but I just have to talk from the heart. That working those steps and working those traditions and being a part of this recovery process has changed my life. And I just totally went blank. You know, over Christmas and everything, we got to have family there, and we had a really good dinner. And it wasn't nothing about the gifts or anything. It was just about family, just about what Christmas really is to me. And that's my higher power, which I call Jesus Christ. And I don't know. I know that prayer and meditation is very important to me, because if I don't get centered, how can I help anybody else? If I'm not right within myself, how can I help anybody else? And I am of service. I secretary a meeting here. I know I should be more of service, but I do what I can. You know, and I don't know. I've had that spiritual awakening in this room, you know, and I think just that the obsession being lifted is a spiritual awakening for me. Because like I said, I was a daily user, daily drinker, and I'm just blessed. I really am. But I know all I did right was I kept coming back. I didn't want to be here, like I said. And the people carried me through, the women carried me through in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's just a blessing, like I said. I want to read something that I wrote today, and I hope it makes sense. It's called Seven Rules of Life. Okay, number one, make peace with your past so it won't disturb your future. Two, what other people think of you is none of your business. Be who you are. Number three is the only person in charge of your happiness is you. And, you know, my happiness I thought was from everybody else, every outside thing in my life, and it was. And I had to come to my inner self and just be happy with myself and move on. Four, but don't compare your life to others. Comparison is the theft of joy. It's the thief of joy. And five, time heals almost everything. Give it time. And like I've shared, it has. I have a quiet heart. Six, stop thinking so much. It's all right not to know all the answers. Seven is smile. You don't own all the problems in the world. And most important, if God is for you, then who can be against you? You know, and that's one thing I didn't realize, that God was there for me all the time. That I didn't realize that. You know, when I was on my bottom, I was like, there was no God. I didn't think there was a God. But if I really look back on my life, he's pulled me up and out of everything that I went through in my life, and he was there all the time. It was a matter of me accepting him. So I don't know. It's going to be a really short meeting because I'm kind of done. I don't really have a lot to say, just that I'm sober and I'm grateful, and the Alcoholics Anonymous will change your life if you're willing to do the work, you know, and that's the bottom line. Come in here and tell us you need help and get numbers, get a sponsor, work those steps, and just do it on a daily basis. It will change your life, you know. I don't know. That's really all I have to say. I just want to wish everybody a happy new year, and I hope everybody stays safe, sane, and sober tonight. And have a good time. It's New Year's Eve. You don't have to drink. You don't have to use. You know, we're not a glum lot. My first thing was, when I got sober, I remember my sponsor, Cindy Jewett, she forced me to go to a dance at the Alano Club, and I'm like, I don't dance sober. Are you kidding me? But I had a blast. You know, so when we have these events, dances, or whatever, go to them. We have lake trips, go to them. The best fun is the lake trips. Jack will tell you, Lynn will tell you, we have a blast. And I've always wanted to have, that's all I wanted was have a good time in life, and Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that. And I'm very, very grateful for that. I really am. So I hope you got something out of it. I'm sorry it's short, but, you know, it is what it is, you know. And I want to thank Robert and Kim for asking me to share. Thank you.
So let's give Susanna Betty another hand. Hey.
Hey, Happy New Year's, everybody. Wow, I couldn't think of a better place to be, Betty. It was beautiful. Even though it was short, I love that it came from the heart. You know, it all took what it took for us to get here, because I don't have that glamorous story of when I came here. It happened to be one night I'd sent off my kids to go stay at somebody else's house so I could do what I wanted to do that night, because I was really good at pawning them off. And I was living by myself in Colorado. It was just me and my oldest daughter who decided she wanted to stay there with me. My family had already moved here. And, you know, why do I want to keep doing this? I'd been in and out of the rooms. I mean, I like rooms that have two doors because I can come in one and go out the other, you know. And that was kind of the way I did it for the first few years that I came in here. But, you know, just being here, staying here, listening to somebody, finding a higher power in my life, you know, I love kids. I got three kids of my own, and I get to see sobriety through my kids all the time because I get to enjoy them. I used to be the guy who sat in the house and go, man, I wonder how those people go to the park and hang out with those kids. Those look really, it looks really fun to do. But when I would do it, I was miserable because I wanted to go do something else. I wanted to go drink. But today I can enjoy that. I can just sit back and enjoy them having fun, and that's a miracle for me. And so, you know, as I close out 2017, another year brings, you know, everyone thinks about, you know, the new changes they can do, and I'm going to keep prospering and trying to do the best thing I can to stay sober. Thanks for calling on me to come up here and share. Thanks.
Janet, alcoholic. My drinking started out high school parties after football games. I felt like I kind of had a normal life in the beginning. My drinking in my 20s started to get a little bit more heavier, a little more often. And it was the progression of it that kind of snuck up on me, and I would still, I would go to barbecues and drink there, go to bars. Later on in the years, it was more home parties. I didn't go to too many bars, but then it came to a point where when I was at the parties or at the barbecues and stuff, I would notice myself drinking more than the other people. And so I was the type of person who wanted to drink a glass of wine with my friends, but they weren't drinking fast enough, so I would have a little bottle of wine in my purse and I'd go in the bathroom and chug it down. And then my friends would tell me, how did you get so drunk so fast? You went from like 0 to 60. Mm-hmm. And but that went on for a while too, and then there were times when I would black out at parties, and I did the whole looking through your phone thing to see like who I called, but then people would just laugh it off. So it was really easy for me to drink, get drunk, pass out, and do it all over again. And I had I had started getting worried about my drinking, and I had a friend who was a nurse, and I told her, I said, man, I think I'm an alcoholic. Do you think I'm an alcoholic? And she's all, no, you're fine. That I got that a lot from my friends. You're fine. You're fine. And so my friend who was a nurse called me the next day, and she goes,
you know, I talked to one of my bosses at the hospital, and you'll be so happy to know you're not an alcoholic because you still have your house, you have your car, you have your marriage. And I was like, ooh, I'm not an alcoholic after all. So, I mean, that was funny. But then it all, I would say, I got away with it and pretty much thought I was normal, did the whole PTA mom thing. Was really like there for my daughter through all her events, always at the school. But then it came to a point where sometimes at those events, I would drink first. And some of the moms would get together and we'd have a glass of wine before like the PTA function. And but the thing is, they would stop. And I'd be the one in the bathroom at the elementary school chugging down another bottle of wine, or not like those little Gallo bottles, and then going back. But they would stop. And so then it came to a point where I remember one time my daughter had a horseback riding. It was like her show. Like she was going up against all the other girls, and it was her showmanship class. And I was so drunk, my niece took her. And then when I woke up, I thought I was sober enough, and I was mad. So I got on my bike and rode to that horseback riding lesson, and I fell off my bike, had a skinned knee. Still thought I was okay. I was a good mom showing up. And then it came to the point, I'm skipping around a lot because my life is just like, whoo. It came to the point where my friends started getting worried because I would show up at barbecues already drunk, just really, really, really drunk, because I would start first thing in the morning. And I was the type of person, too, I remember going over to my sister's house, and she had a glass of wine for, it was like in the middle of the day, and I'm like, how could you drink during the day? And then pretty soon I was drinking from morning till night. And where was I going with that? So I got my first DUI picking my daughter up from school. And I was mad because I was home drunk, passed out, so my husband told my niece to pick her up. And so I went to the school, and not realizing my husband had made other arrangements, because I woke up out of a blackout, looked at the clock and thought, oh crap, I have to go get my daughter. So when I went to go get her, my niece had already started walking away, and I'm like, no, you come with me. And she noticed I had been drinking, and so she called the police on me. And this was my niece I had raised, so she was like a daughter to me. So she called the police, and that's where I got my first DUI outside of my daughter's school. And then after that, I still kept drinking. And on your first DUI, you're just on court probation, so really nobody knew until one time I was drunk and my husband called the police on me, and they realized I had a DUI, so then I got a violation. So then it started in and out of jail. In and out of jail. I mean, you talk about a revolving door where mine had bars on it. I was in and out of jail several times. But then every time I would come out, my friends would always forgive me. They'd be there for me. And even though I wouldn't drink, I would get back into my life. And I was still coming to AA, but I didn't want to give up my normal life. And I didn't want to be... got sober for quite a while, and I told my niece, I said, I'm not going to go to AA. I didn't get sober to hide in the walls of AA. I got sober so I could be around you guys. And so that was my whole mindset. And so I think that's one thing that hindered my ability to grasp onto the program, because I wanted to get sober to be normal. And it just was not working, but I would not quit trying. And this was all the way up until... last December, last Christmas, I was in jail for Christmas. And it just took a toll. I mean, I was the type who, when I was in jail one time, I got out on it was called a cruise waiver, because I had to sign some paperwork. We were selling our house. So I got out of jail, went home, did the paperwork. It happened to be around Easter. And it was a jogathon at my daughter's school. So I get out of jail, go to the jogathon, volunteer. I'm home for Easter, So I go back to jail, finish out my time, and I'm a good mom because I didn't miss any important events. I was crazy. It was that insanity that I wasn't working the program the way it should be worked, and that insanity just wasn't going away. And so, it was just the continual trying to drink. It got so bad. But see, when my bads were bad, I would get better again, and then I would forget all the bad. It just, like, would be washed away, and I just wouldn't remember how bad it actually was. I would only remember the good, and I romanced alcohol for a long time. Because there were times when I would, actually, my husband kept finding my alcohol, because I did the whole hiding it under your bed, hiding it in the hampers, and so he kept finding it and dumping it out. So I went to the lengths of going into alleys and hiding my alcohol down the alley. And I would hide it in bushes, behind dumpsters. I mean, I went pretty far down the scale, but I would always bounce back. And I would walk around as if nobody knew, you know, and I'm sure people knew. And so this last time, I mean, and each time I would lose a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. Pretty soon, we didn't lose our house, but we sold it. And then I lost the car, then loss of husband, fighting now for the custody of my daughter. And it took all that for me to open my eyes and realize that normal's boring. I'd rather be here. It's just, it took what it took for me to open my eyes and see things differently. And it's the whole humbling myself that I never wanted to do before. Living within my means instead of always wanting to live above my means. Always trying to ignore my alcoholism and the strive to be normal. It's just, it's not worth it anymore. I just basically got tired. And so coming back, like I said, I've been in and out of the rooms, in and out of the rooms. People who have seen me for a long time, like when Betty was talking about shaking and baking, well, that was me. I would come into the meetings so bloated in my face. And, I mean, people who have been around a long time have seen me on my good days, and they've seen me on my bad days. And it was just that if there's anybody in the room who slips or you struggle, I mean, it doesn't have to be a revolving door, but it was for me. And I'm just glad that it swings both ways. But I hope that this time it's only swinging in and not out, because I don't want to go back out there again, because now I'm not forgetting all the bad that had happened and all of those days in jail. Like, I still go to an outpatient program. I have about one more week of that, and they were asking me, you know, what are you going to do when you know, these triggers come? And one of the things that got me through this Christmas was remembering how cold, damp, dirty, and ugly it was last Christmas. And I'm going to keep coming back, and I have an awesome sponsor. She's actually been there for me pretty much since I came in the door. She wasn't always my sponsor, but she was always my friend. And she's been there through some pretty, pretty bad times. I remember crying on the floor on my knees to her, and she's, bless her heart, never left my side. She has faith in me when I don't have faith in myself, so that's a big thing also. And I think that's about it.
All right, thank you, Janet. Thank you, everybody who shared. And let's give everybody another round of applause.